Leaning Toward Wisdom. LeaningTowardWisdom.com is the website. This is episode 4044. We go at it pretty hard. We push a lot of air on that stage.
Dark clouds are blowing in the wind. He's crossing your mind again. You got that sad, sad feeling from a broken heart. Feeling so close to the end. Let me love you tonight. There's a million stars in the sky. Let me love you tonight. I'll make everything all right. When you find out how
it's the 1980 hit from Pure Prairie League. The album is called Firing Up. Let Me Love You Tonight. You know the singer. Oklahoma's own Vince Gill. I've been a fan of Pure Prairie League for a long, long time. Craig Fuller, he was one of the co-founders of the band. The guy wrote Amy. It was ironic that he would be replaced by Vince Gill, who would eventually marry Amy Grant. So he could really sing the song Amy. Yeah, just like Craig did. I'm sure there was an Amy in his life, too. Oklahoma, Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain. Gordon McRae and Shirley Jones, they sang that in the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, Oklahoma. I was born in Oklahoma. You know, there are some famous people who have been born in Oklahoma. Quite a few of them are musicians. Actually,
Oklahoma's has enjoyed a long history of really neat musical people, and I just think it's where it is and what it is, you know, that creates people that are interested in the earth, that are interested in music, and you know, always jokes that there's really not much else to do.
Well, that's that's probably true. Brad Pitt, Carrie Underwood, Reba McEntire, Garth Brooks, Chuck Norris, Blake Shelton, Toby Keith, Dr. Phil, Ron Howard, Opie, Mickey Mantle, James Garner, Will Rogers, Gary Busey, Hoyt Axton. Man, we lost Hoyt. J.J. Cale, Roy Clark, Woody Guthrie, Roger Miller, Ben Rector, Ryan Tedder. Yeah, you know, man, the hit machine behind One Republic. B.J. Thomas, Paul Harvey, Johnny Bench, Troy Aikman, and yes, the man behind that voice, Vince Gill. Today's show title comes from Norman, Oklahoma's own Vince Gill. PremierGuitar.com, they interviewed Vince in his home studio in July of 2013, and at some point in that interview, Vince is asked about the amplifiers on stage.
How do you normally set kind of your amps when you're... Does that change with guitar, or does that change with... Do you kind of set it and just leave it?
I play with a drummer named Billy Thomas who's deaf, so I just have to play loud enough to be louder than him. So it's pretty loud. Yeah. Now, we go at it pretty hard. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that it's fun when music's cranked up. It really... You know, it hits you, and it. I always have my amps on stage. I don't do in-ears. I don't do any of that. So we we put forth a lot of we push a lot of air on that stage.
Going at it pretty hard. Vince Gill, he is an extraordinary talent. I first saw him play live in Norman with Pure Prairie League. And just last month, the Country Music Association awarded him the 2014 Irving Waugh Award of Excellence. It's only the second one they've ever awarded. Johnny Cash, he got the first one. Yeah, Vince is in pretty good company. He has sold over 26 million albums. He has 18 CMA Awards, 20 Grammys. Oh, and he ain't done yet. It was funny. At the end of his acceptance speech for this 2014 Irving Waugh Award of Excellence, he commented that a governor from Tennessee once said this to him, and we all know it's true. The attendance at your funeral will be largely dependent on the weather. Hey, well, in the meantime, you know, Vince has been, he's been going at it pretty hard. And that's the point of today's show, going at it pretty hard. I could have focused on another Okie, Blake Shelton. We were both born in the same town of Ada, Oklahoma. Blake, he's been going at it pretty hard, too. Well, yeah, I mean, he's kind of a notable drinker. I don't know if that's so much shtick or it's real. I perceive that it's real, but, you know, I don't know that. I would say Blake, he's still going at it a lot harder than Vince. But, you know, Vince is my age. Blake's only 38. You can go at it harder when you're younger. I mean, Vince did. And now it's Blake's turn, along with a host of other country music stars. You already know how much I love music. I mean, come on. If you listen to this podcast at all, you get it. And how much I love the guitar, even though I have never learned to play one. Vince Gill simply has mad dog skills. He is a player's player. And the voice, well, man alive, the voice is just as smooth as they come. He's easy on the ears. And, hey, me being an audio guy, I get a lot of guidance through my ears. And I can relate to Vince Gill. Maybe it's because we're both from Oklahoma. Maybe it's because we were born the same year. That's about all we've got in common, because I can't play anything other than a kazoo. And singing, well, you know, I wouldn't make the cut on American Idol. Well, I might if they had a dinosaur version. But I love his story, and I think we can learn a thing or three from it. Some of the sound clips, by the way, in today's show will come from an interview that Vince did with Achievement.org about 5 years ago. And there are links, by the way. You need to visit the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. And in that search this website box, just enter the number 4044, and you'll be able to get those links. Well, Vince didn't always go at it hard because he had a deaf drummer. I mean, he always went at it hard, but it wasn't always because he had a deaf drummer. He did it because there was something he wanted very, very badly. When he got out of high school in 1975, he'd already been playing bluegrass music with some local success. He moves to Louisville, Kentucky to play in a bluegrass band, and after a while he moved to Los Angeles where he continued playing bluegrass, and in 1979, he joined Pure Prairie League, where he stayed for three albums. And Let Me Love You Tonight, it was a hit in 1980 with Pure Prairie League. By 1981, he was gone from Pure Prairie League, instead choosing to play in Rodney Crowell's band until 1983, and then that's when he goes to Nashville to pursue this real dream of being a solo country music artist. You could say it took him 8 years to really figure out what he wanted to do, but, you know, I would say that it took him, well, I would say that it would have taken him longer if he hadn't gone at it as hard as he did. Because the benefit of going at it hard as soon as possible is that it can help you accelerate your progress to figuring out what it is you really want. I haven't known many people who knew exactly what they wanted right out of the gate. I've known some, but boy, not very many. Are you still trying to figure it out? And maybe it's a business idea. Maybe it's a bigger life idea. Well, sitting around ain't going to help. Going at it pretty hard, that'll help. Vince's dad taught him to play the guitar, well, and the banjo. And along the way, he learned to play the fiddle and the mandolin and, well, who knows how many other stringed instruments. He clearly loved bluegrass music, and so that's what he chased hard at first. His dad, by the way, was a judge in Oklahoma. The kid grew up in Norman, Oklahoma, home to the University of Oklahoma. Yeah, I'd go there, but boy, the football season this year was just dreadful. Higher education, though, it just didn't figure into the mix. I mean, Vince was all in on music, and that's what he went pretty hard at. Here's the question. What are you going at it pretty hard? Hey, I mean, you got to be going at something pretty hard. What is it? Now, some are going pretty hard at money. And we enjoy hearing how that's a failed strategy. But, you know, I know guys who, man, they want to be rich. They've wanted to be rich. And I know some who got rich. They didn't much care how. I'm not sure that they're outliers either, by the way. I rather think that if a person has some talent and enough drive and they're obsessed with being rich, I personally think they stand a pretty fair chance of getting it done. I mean, they might be miserable otherwise, but building a bank account is like, it's like building anything else. I mean, get the right resources, find the right skills, get busy, man. Go at it hard. I'm not convinced that people can't get rich simply because that's their goal. Well, people would tell you that. I don't believe it. Highbrow thinkers, they would have us believe that you need to chase a passion, not money. But, you know, I know for some people, hey, not only is money their passion, it's their God. Man, they serve it. Well, Vince, he wanted to play music. Going at it pretty hard involves verbs. Verbs, and the verb, well, the verb for Vince, the single verb for Vince, there were some others. We'll talk about those along the way here. The verb was play. What's your verb? I mean, that's where merely chasing money, maybe that's where maybe it can be tough. It can be tough for all but the most devoted. I mean, imagine an obsession that's necessary to get rich. But you don't care how. You just want to get rich. I mean, I don't know about you, but that seems tough to me. I can't imagine it. But then again, I'm not devoted to getting rich. Think of a verb. Think of just a single verb. And it could be anything. But it needs to be singular. Let me shoot a few at you. Write. Speak. Teach. Draw. Paint. Design, code, carve, engineer, preach, record. I mean, write down the one verb that depicts what you most want to do. And you're going to want to write down a whole bunch of them. I can tell you already. And that's okay. It's okay. Write down a bunch of them if you want, but you got to be committed to whittle it down. Just be committed to whittle that list down. Narrow it down to the one big one. Yeah, it might be like Vince and his stringed instruments. The verb for Vince was play, but, you know, that involves singing, too. And it meant not just the guitar, but it meant the mandolin and the banjo and some other instruments, even though the guitar was the primary tool. But all rolled up, it meant play music. Ah, there's the subject. There's the subject to Vince's verb, play, music. What's your subject? Now that you've thought about your verb, what's your subject? Vince's was music, so his goal was to play music. And that's what he went all in on. Pay attention to the tense of the verb, play. It's present tense. It's right now. It's not in the future. It's not in the past. It's right now. I've never talked with Vince, but I have followed him most of his entire career, And I've read an awful lot, and I've listened to an awful lot of interviews with him. And not just in preparation for today's show, but, yeah, some. But for a long, long time, I'm confident that he would say that it'd be proper to say that he was all in on playing music. Ongoing. Doing it today, doing it tomorrow, doing it as for long as he can see into the future. He wanted to be playing music. He still wants to be playing music. I don't know about you, but I don't have any doubt that he'll be playing music till he dies. In a video, he shows off some of his extensive guitar collection. He built this remarkable studio, this home studio, and he said he never figured that he would build a home studio, but one of the things that he loved about it is all the music that's coming into the house. He's got all these cool people coming over to the house to record, and it's just been this enormous blessing, he says, to him to have this space for that very reason. And he remarks in this interview where he's showing off some of his guitar collection. He's got a remarkable collection. And the walls are just lined, especially with acoustic guitars. And he's got these drawers where he's got the electrics. But he comments about a guitar that his wife bought him for his 50th birthday.
This was a gift from Amy. I love that my wife has good taste. This is an OM-45 from 1930. And they only made, I think, 41 of these in history. And I happen to have a couple of them. And this was for my 50th birthday. And I saw the case, you know, and I knew it was something good. And just grateful to be married to a kind woman. Do some tuning. Couldn't we all?
It could use some tuning. Couldn't we all? Hey, Vince went at it hard. Left home when he was a teenager, all to pursue the goal to play music. And after some success, it would seem that Vince was figuring out what was working and what wasn't. He veers from bluegrass to alt country slash rock with Pure Prairie League. He's lead guitarist and singer for the band. He's writing, he's recording songs that he wrote. It's not the bluegrass crowd. It's younger. It's more hip. And got way more rock and roll in it. But it's still got country. But it's not bluegrass. Now, I don't know exactly what made him shift, but I know enough about music to know that bluegrass and Pure Prairie League music both share country music ties. But they couldn't be really at different ends of the country spectrum. My theory is that Vince was learning country music was where he wanted to be. He was figuring it out. Country music would allow him to enjoy years of session playing with rock musicians and bluegrass musicians, and he was likely hearing in his head the kind of country music that he most wanted to play. And he's gone on record for a lot of years saying that if his career would have simply been the career of a session musician playing on other people's records, man, he would have considered it a success. I think this clarity is important because it kept him on track. It removed distractions. It made other choices easy to decline. And this is important. Because one day in 1989, Vince had to make what I would think and what any of us would have to think. It just had to be a ridiculously tough, tough choice.
It's not always about the attention you get and a dollar bill and how many of them you get, you know. Sometimes you make decisions that defy logic, I guess. But I made one, and years later I was invited by Mark Knopfler to join Dire Straits. And it was at a time where I, you know, was pretty broke. You know, I was really struggling. I'd had a record deal for several years but couldn't turn that into hit records and couldn't turn that into a big career, and even though I was trying, and this would have been a very lucrative, great move financially and in a lot of ways. Musically, it would have been a great move. But I said, I can't do it right now. I said, I just changed record companies, and I've invested a lot of my life in country music, and I said, I don't want to bail on it.
because I think I have something to offer it. And, you know, that was like, here was the golden egg being dangled in front of me, and I turned it down. And I was lucky, you know, because then the next record I had was this massive hit, and it completely turned my life around. And so I made a decision based on my heart, and it hadn't let me down very often. When it happened in, I think, 1989 or 1990, he came to see me play in New York, and I was a huge fan of Mark Knopfler's and the band, and loved their records, and loved the way he played the guitar. That's, you know, once again, that common bond that would have drawn him to me and me to him was that we liked the way we each other played, you know, so there was that, we had something in common. And at the time, you know, it was a fork in the road, and the obvious choice, because of what had happened up until then, would have been go and go play with this nationally known band, do a world tour, make a bunch of money, get your family healthy, and pay for your house and all that. But I chose the other one just because I believed in myself. And it was not the decision that would have probably made the most sense for the circumstances that I was in. But once again, I felt like making that decision was the acceptance of failure.
Man, there's just so much there, right? You know, he believed in himself. Hey, by 1989, Dire Straits was a well-established major rock band. Now, they had had a bit of an on-again, off-again history because they had, you know, they'd stopped and then they had rebooted and started. But still, come on. I mean, this is Mark Knopfler and Dire Straits calling. Joe Walsh said yes to the Eagles when they called in 1975. But you may not know that he said no to Humble Pie that same year because, well, Peter Frampton, he left. Vince and Joe both had enough clarity to know what to accept and what to reject. And walking away from something so that you can walk towards something else, it ain't easy. Well, it ain't as easy as it sounds. I mean, when you're going at it pretty hard, though, you're doing that because you know where you're headed. And Vince, well, he followed his heart. And even if you've just got the big picture clear in your mind, going at it hard can help you when the details start coming at you. Joe Walsh knew that going to the Eagles was the right fit for him. Vince Gill knew that Nashville and a solo career in country music, that was better for him than Dire Straits. Okay, well, let's forget about Joe being hopped up on drugs and alcohol. I mean, the man was a rock and roll guitar hero, and maybe moving to London to join Humble Pie wasn't so tempting as joining a bunch of Southern California-based guys that were building the next supergroup. But if you know enough about Joe and Humble Pie, and if you've read anything, as I have, being a music guy that I am, you know that Joe left James Gang because, well, he was ready for a musical change. He wanted to rock hard, but he also wanted something more. He wanted more diversity, and the Eagles provided him the ideal platform to play music. And there's the verb and the subject again, to play music that suited him best. And he also had the ability to keep doing his own solo stuff. So back in 1989, Dire Straits, they're pure rock and roll. And there's nothing country about them. Now, later on, Mark Knopfler, he has since gone on to work with the likes of Chet Atkins and Emmylou Harris. You know, but that was tough to see in 1989. And that sound, that Mark Knopfler sound as a soloist, didn't really cross over so much into Dire Straits, certainly not back in 89, not in any major way. Vince wanted to play country music. And he pushed hard, and he remained true to what he most wanted. He also said in that interview with PremierGuitar.com, we push a lot of air on stage. And there's two ideas that I'd like us to examine and extract from that. Of course, you know, as with everything that I do here at Leaning Toward Wisdom, it's a lot of metaphorical stuff here. But two ideas I want you to think about. One is what it means to push a lot of air, and the other is the stage. Now, Vince just means we play loud. I mean, he commented about that in that first sound bite that, you know, I mean, we like to play music loud. There's a value in that, and Vince understands that. Speakers make sound by pushing air. You're hearing me through your earbuds because those little magic beans inside your earbuds, they're pushing air. And every time I speak and every time there's sound, that's air being pushed into your eardrum. Volume increases when you push more air. So Vince is saying they play really loud on stage. One of my all-time favorite bands is Bare Naked Ladies. These cats out of Canada, they captured me with their very first album, Gordon. Some years ago, Ed Robertson, one of the founding members, he would do these YouTube videos, and he would subtitle them Bathroom Sessions because they were recorded just, I don't know, he just had some kind of a camera, and you'd see him leaning forward, and he'd hit record, and then he'd back up, and he's in his bathroom, right, with bathroom acoustics, really hard, echoey kind of acoustics, playing and singing in the bathroom. Okay, very different, I imagine, than being on stage. And, you know, bands that practice in a garage, you don't perform the same way once you get up in front of a live audience.
Straight in the window, try not to look below, pretend I'm not up here.
So there's Ed playing from a record, playing a song, When I Fall, right? So he's in the bathroom, and you know, it's kind of cool. I mean, it's a very cool, you need to go check out the YouTube videos because it's really cool stuff, but it's not quite the same as when they get on stage live.
Look straight in the window, try not to look below, pretend I'm not up here. I try counting sheep. The sheep seem to shower off this office tower. It's 9.8 straight down. Can't stop my knees. I wish I could fly from this building, from this wall. And if I should try, would you catch me if I fall? My hands clenched the squeegee, a secular rosary. Hang on to your wallet, hang on to your rings. I can't look below me, something will throw me. A curse at the windstorms that October brings. I look straight in the boardroom, a modern pharaoh's tomb.
Same song he performed there in his bathroom session, When I Fall. Different performance, though, right? The stage matters. It affects the performance. Now, it takes competence and it takes confidence to push a lot of air on stage. And not everybody can do it. And some just can't do it consistently. some years ago, I was coaching a lot of hockey, and I was constantly searching for some insights, you know, to help me teach players, particularly younger players, to teach them how to perform better. And I knew a few minor league professional hockey players here in Dallas and Fort Worth. In fact, back in the day, there was a minor league team in Dallas, and there was a minor league team in Fort Worth. And, you know, these guys were all-star players back home, wherever home was. And many of them, if not most of them, were from Canada. And, you know, from the time they were little kids, they were the best players on the best teams. Until they weren't. And what was the difference, I wondered, in their talent? What was the difference in their talent in the NHL or major league talent? And over again, I would hear the same refrain from these guys. I can play at the NHL level sometimes, but I can't do it night in and night out. NHL guys, they can play at a high level on the biggest stage of their profession more consistently than those minor league guys. Is the stage too big for the minor league guys? Is the competition too stiff? Yeah. Yeah, all of those things. The bigger the stage, the bigger the performance must be if you're going to hold up, and you'd better push a lot of air. Minor leaguers just can't push a lot of air all the time to stay on the big stage, and so they're relegated to ride buses with a $25 a day per diem, meanwhile, the NHL player, he's getting hundreds of dollars a day per diem, and he's riding in customized airliners, and he's staying in world-class hotels. I mean, it's a fine line between consistency and inconsistency, and it creates this cavernous gap, this cavernous value gap. Hey, speaking of value gap, do you ever visit Celebrity Net Worth? Okay, true confession. I checked Vince Gill's listing there, $30 million. Yeah, not bad. And then I checked out his wife, Amy Grant. $55 million. I mean, she's talented and all, but does that shock you like it shocked me? This is Vince Gill. Really? I mean, Amy Grant's nearly twice? Nah, I don't know. It just doesn't seem right to me, but hey. By the time Vince Gill moved to Nashville in 1983, he had been playing live for over over 10 years, and that's assuming a few years in high school, but that's not right because he'd been playing live since he could remember. I mean, he's only 8 years out of high school at this point, but he benefited from starting early. And not all of us are able to do that. Some of us, we don't have a clue what we want to do. Well, shoot, some of us, we're decades away from high school, and we're still trying to figure it out. Vince was lucky. He knew early what he wanted to do. But it wasn't clear in 1975. I mean, in 1975, it looked like bluegrass. And then it looked like alt country. And eventually, yeah, it looked like country. And if you're going to go all in on playing country music, as Vince did, well, there's only one place to go. In Nashville, Tennessee. When I think of the trajectory of Vince Gill's career, it's easier to look at now, of course, and to see some major pivots that worked to his advantage. And that's the point of today's show, is for us to learn this stuff and figure this stuff out in our lives. He didn't waste 4 years going to college. No, he didn't. I mean, he's just a few years removed from high school, and he's a professional. He's leading a band, traveling all over the country, Pure Prairie League. He was recording records that included his own songs. He couldn't have done that sitting in a classroom at OU. You know, but that wouldn't have happened if he hadn't left Kentucky and the bluegrass scene and gone to Los Angeles. And by 1980, he had that top 10 country hit that I played at the beginning of the show, Let Me Love You Tonight. He had two remarkable talents, playing guitar, man, and a crazy, easy-to-listen-to tenor voice. Competence fueled his confidence. Now, too many people seem to reverse those today. You know, there are people, and they work hard to really be confident. You know, they seem to rather push more chips into the middle of the table when the stakes are confidence. You see it every time there's a new season of American Idol. Guys like Vince didn't have American Idol. I mean, they had to prove their chops every week by playing somewhere live, someplace that would let them get up in front of people. And it was mostly about getting better, forging your competence. It wasn't about walking into a club or some small venue with a cocky attitude and then, well, okay, you really can't play very well. No, remember the goal. Play music. The verb was important, and the verb demanded skill. Play. Watch any beginner guitar player. Try it yourself. I have. You will not go at it hard. You will not push a lot of air. I don't know what you're doing. Whatever it is, whatever the metaphor is for playing guitar, but you know, when you pick it up, you're not competent, and because you're not competent, you're timid, man. You're very timid. You're not strumming this guitar with any kind of authority. You're insecure about yourself, and you're completely baffled as to where your fingers are supposed to go and how you're supposed to hold this thing and move your hands around. And you know why? You know you suck. People who go at it hard and push a lot of air, well, usually, not always, but usually they're competent. Not always. I mean, sometimes they're just crazy.
I think I have a very unique vocal style. It's like pop rock meets Broadway meets jazz and R&B. It's a very unique combination of all the three. At least that's how I would describe it. I'm going to walk in like I'm confident. No, head up high, strutting my stuff. Not too much strut, though, because that looks tacky. I want this so bad, there's no way that I'm not going to get it. Right away. Oh. That's what they always say in theater.
Hello, Mary.
Hey, hello.
Very good.
So am I.
How you doing?
To the T right there.
Right on, okay.
Your name is?
Mary Roach. However, if I do make it to Hollywood, I'm going to change my last name to Gilbo because it has more star quality.
Mary Gilbo.
That's right. G-U-I-L-B-E-A-U-X.
What do you do?
Well, I plan on going to cosmetology school at the end of the month. Unless I make it to Hollywood, then I'm going to cancel my plans because I would much rather have a singing career than a hairstyling career, even though I very much love hair, makeup, and fashion as well.
And why are you here?
I'm here because I want to be the next American Idol, and I want to make it to Hollywood, and it's been my all-time dream for a long time to become a big, famous singer and performer, and this is just one way to do it if I make it.
What are you going to sing?
I'm going to sing I Feel the Earth Move by Carole King.
All right, off you go.
I feel the earth move, fall on my feet. I feel the sky come falling down. I feel my heart start trembling down when I fall short of ground. Oh, baby, when I see your face mellow as the month of May. Oh, darling, I can stand it when you look at me that way. Yeah. I feel the earth move, fall on my feet. I feel the sky tumbling down. I feel my heart.
This poor crazy girl goes on and on, and she is hopping around the stage. She is gesturing wildly, and the camera shows the judges, and they're just, yeah, they're just in stunned disbelief. Simon Cowell, he breaks the tension once she has finished. You know, she has just completely butchered Carole King's hit song, and enter Simon Cowell.
How do you think you did?
Not too shabby.
Marks out of 10?
Like, out of a 1 to 10 scale, how do you think I think I did? 8.
All right, Mary. Honestly, one of the worst I've ever heard in my life.
The worst?
Yeah, honestly.
Are you just saying that to get on my nerves, or are you totally serious? Because something tells me that I think you're saying it to annoy me.
But what made you audition for this competition?
All my friends told me that I was an awesome singer.
What?
Mary, you can't sing a note. I mean, not only can you not sing a note in tune, you have one of the weirdest voices I've ever heard in my life.
Well, weirdness is originality, too.
Well, yes.
Good point.
Well, you know, at least I'm not going to walk out of here crying like some people do.
No, I don't want you to,
I'm
Mary.
I'm going to walk out here being like, hey, whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Would you like me to sing like myself? I have a ton of different voices.
Right. Well, what were those?
You don't want to hear them.
You have a lot of voices, huh?
In your head.
In your head? Are they talking all the time?
Yeah, I think so.
What are they saying now?
They're saying, I didn't know the judges on American Idol would actually think I was terrible. They're also saying, Mark McGrath is a hottie. They're also saying,
he's a good judge.
All y'all look different in person. I pictured you to be bigger. You're prettier than I thought you were. You look thinner than I thought you were.
The soundtrack to this section, I think, should be violin music. I mean, yeah. Mary, I think we're just going to say no and wish you lots of luck at beauty school.
Yeah, definitely.
You seriously think I'm one of the worst singers you've ever heard?
I actually do, Mary, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
I really thought I was going to make it to Hollywood, and I can't believe the outcome, but whatever.
Hang in there, honey. It's just
Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you so much.
By the way, she did end up crying. She ended up dropping a few F-bombs and a few finger gestures. Crazy. Crazy. Hey, Vince Gill, he was once asked about an American Idol winner, Carrie Underwood.
I was not an American Idol watcher, so I did not really know of Carrie from American Idol. Knew of her. I mean, you can't help but know of American Idol. But I never watched it much, and when I first heard her sing, I said, "Well, no wonder she won." You know, it's the kind of voice that's undeniable. You know, you know people like that the first time you hear them. That it's not going to matter which bridge you cross to get the opportunity to perform in front of people and do what it is that you love to do. That once that talent is exposed, everybody goes, okay, we give up. You know, it's just great.
You got to have talent. You got to have something of value more so than the next guy. Life is a competition at some level. Now, Vince Gill, he has had extraordinary success, but you know, he's an extraordinary talent. Watch the video of young Vince playing with Pure Prairie League, and you will see, well, you just see some semblance of who the man is today. But, you know, he's pushing a lot more air today. He was pushing a lot of air then, but he's pushing a lot more today. He's going at it pretty hard, maybe harder than ever. You know, it's the beauty of a person figuring out what they're really good at, what they most want to do, who they most want to be, and then going all in on it. I mean, think about verbs first. Think about what you're really good at doing. Think about what you most want to do. And those two, by the way, need to be congruent, well, or else you end up like crazy, you know, crazy Mary on American Idol. You know, it's just end up being psycho. You know, you don't want this to be the soundtrack of your life. Trust me. No, it won't work out good. You know, it's, you know, I don't know where Mary's at today, but I don't want her to know where I live. What's the one big verb that you can embrace as your special power? What's the one special verb that you're working on nonstop to improve? What verb are you fully devoted to? I want you to listen to Vince Gill's verb. I want you to listen to what it was, what it still is. Keep this in mind. The verb is play.
Well, I started playing. I don't, you know, I cannot consciously remember
an age where I started playing, I know that I had a very small parlor guitar that had a like a lampshade cord on it, and it was broken and probably didn't have all of its strings, and I don't remember, but I've seen pictures of me when I was one or two, you know, just getting around dragging that guitar around. So I know that I had always had one around to play on and beat on and all that. And I played my father's, he had two guitars, and I played them. And then he also got me, when I was very small, a tenor guitar, which only has the first four strings. So the neck is much smaller, not as wide as a six-string guitar. So I learned to play on a tenor guitar and tuned it like the first four strings of a regular guitar. There's a lot of different tunings for a tenor guitar. Some are much different, you know, but I tuned it like a regular guitar and started learning the rudimentary chords from my dad, and he showed me. And I was playing, you know, at show and tell stuff in grade school, second, third grade. And so I don't have a conscious memory of when I started, but all I know is it's all I've ever done.
No, that's pretty fantastic, isn't it? I mean, you talk about starting early. He can't remember not playing. Well, and doesn't it show? And I'm not saying that, you know, to be world class or to be even extraordinary that you got to do that, but kind of shows. But there was another verb that impacted his life, and it was the verb listen. He listened to records, and he bought records. And if you're an old guy like he and I are, and you're of our generation, then you likely remember the time when everything was vinyl, and you had this great information on the back cover of records.
As I look back, I really feel like that records were my books, you know. And I would study the, you know, it was back in the day when the albums were large. You could read the credits. You knew who played on things. You know who wrote the songs, who sang on things. And I was one of those kids that loved all the information on a record. I spent years buying records of artists I'd never heard of, just because I knew the guitar player, or I knew somebody that played a certain instrument that I said, well, if this guy played on this record, maybe there's something good in there because I like that musician. So I felt like those records told me stories in a way that related to me more because of my brain was stimulated by sounds more than sights, I think. And I loved listening to records and trying to emulate what I was hearing. You know, I'm self-taught. And all by ear and all, you know, just by hearing it come through the speakers. And I said, how'd they do that? And just sit and practice and noodle and mess around till I made the same sounds.
Vince's life so far has been defined by his commitment to these verbs, his verbs. And he's also been committed to the process of improving. He didn't want to just play and sing and listen. He wanted to be a player. He wanted to be a singer. He wanted to be a songwriter. He wanted to participate in making music. And years ago, when he was very young, those were the verbs. I too once was very young, and I had dreams of writing, and I remember reading a few important sentences that stuck with me. Writers write. If you want to write, then write. Well, Vince, he wanted to play. He wanted to sing, and he wanted to write. He wanted to write songs, and so that's what he did. That's how you become a singer, a writer, and an artist.
I'm having the best time playing music, and my folks saw that. And so they never said, when are you going to go get a real job? Because I had really put a lot of effort into it long before it was time to move on and go to college and think about something else. And I think that's another reason maybe a lot of young musicians fall by the wayside. They're not willing to do what I did, which is go out there and, you know, play on street corners once in a while to make enough money to pay your rent and be willing to starve. You know, they always want that safety net. They want that cushion. And I never needed it, you know. And I don't feel any different today at 52 than I did at 18, you know. And what's in the bank account has never changed 1 ounce of what I love doing. You know, I'd still be doing it at 52 if I was still playing those same beer joints. To me, progress was not how much more money I could make, but how much better I could be. So how am I as a guitar player at this point versus what I was 3 years ago? And then who am I playing with? Am I playing with better musicians? Yes. So every step that I felt like I made was progress in my mind. Might not have been financially the same thing. There was one point when I was in my early 20s, I'd spent a few years playing with Pure Prairie League and had a few hit records and was on television shows and was the front man. I was the lead singer, and I quit to go be a side man in one of my favorite musician and songwriter singers, a guy named Rodney Crowell, to just be his guitar player, harmony singer. I said, "What are you doing? You were the guy in the front." And I go, "Yeah, but this band's better, you know. These songs are better. It was a move up. It didn't, to most people, it wouldn't look like that. But I knew in my heart and my ears told me this is a better thing."
Vince learned the power of the process. Man, I've talked about that here. You can go back in the archives and see I did an entire show on the value of the process. The wisdom that he has found is that all the relationships that he has made along the way, all the records that he's played on, all the improvements that he's made, that's the stuff of significance. That's the stuff of achievement.
I think I've learned that the result is not as important as the work. You know, I feel like the journey is more important than where I wound up at the end of the journey. The end of the journey is not the exercise, it's the journey. And I feel the same way with, you know, my achievements with the tools that I had to achieve them with felt as great as 17 as they do at 52. You know, for as you grow and as you get older, all you're hoping to do is get better at what it is that you're doing. And I know I sing better, play better, write better today than I did 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, all the above. And I heard Kenny Rogers speak not long ago, and he said something that was pretty impactful to me. He hadn't made a record in a long time, and they said, "Why'd you make a record? You hadn't made one in a long time. Were you worried that it might not be successful?" He says, "My interest was not making a record that was successful. It was making a record that was significant." And I just loved the heart in that, because that to me is the equivalent of an achievement.
He slipped the ring off his finger. When he walked in the room, and he found him some stranger, promised her the moon.
From his 1991 record, Pocket Full of Gold, That's the title track. I mean, the guy's just easy to listen to, isn't he? You can buy all of his stuff at iTunes. You can buy that Pure Prairie League tune that we played at the beginning. Buy that at iTunes, too. The guy's just a spectacular talent. Vince Gill. It's episode 4044. We go at it pretty hard. We push a lot of air on that stage. How hard do you go at it? How much air are you pushing on stage? You know, I think the verbs and the nouns, I mean, these really matter. They really do. I don't know that we give them enough attention. I think we're living in a world that is just so captivated by the confident. And competence is kind of sometimes lost. I know it seems like old fuddy-duddy stuff because I sometimes hear older musicians. I've heard the guys in Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young talk about it. I've heard a number of people talk about just the musicianship and some things being lost in that arena. And maybe it's true in a lot of arenas. But we need to go at it pretty hard. We need to push a lot of air on that stage. And we don't need to be like Crazy Mary. We need to know what we're competent about and what we're working to be more competent about. At 52, and I guarantee he would say the same thing now that he's 57, Vince Gill in these interviews, and there's lots more of those, by the way, just go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, look up episode 4044. He's better today. He's better today. He's been working at it. You know, he's going at it hard, and he's pushing a whole lot of air on stage. My name is Randy Cantrell. Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas is where I'm from. Well, I'm from Ada, Oklahoma. But I live in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. I hope you'll visit the website. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast. Tell a friend. Join the Facebook group, won't you? Thanks for listening. Man, I really debated on what to play going out in this, I don't know, what do they call these? I want to say they're prologues. That doesn't sound right, but I don't know. Whatever it is that kind of bats clean up here. And looking around, and I don't know, we'll stick with the Oklahoma thing. This is a record. I've talked about this record before, and you need to buy this for sure. It needs to be in everybody's collection. This guy was a phenom. This record came out in 1972. It was a Shelter record, which was Leon Russell's record label. And the guy was from Highland Park here in Dallas, Texas. And for those of you that don't know, Highland Park, if you're familiar with Highland Park in Chicago, similar deal. Big money. Big, big money. Well, Willis Allen Ramsey was a Highland Park kid and traveled down to the Hill Country into Austin. And we're going way back, man. I mean, we're in the early 70s. We're in Jerry Jeff Walker, Jimmy Buffett. And the record that he did, he made some money because he wrote Muskrat Love. And Muskrat was a song that the group America made a hit from. And many of us, we've waited years and years and years, and we're like, man, when's Willis Allen Ramsey going to come out with something new? And I just, you know, never has. He's still playing music from what I hear. And, you know, people, it was just, man, he just did this magnificent work. Jimmy Buffett recorded Ballad of Spider John, which was also on this record. But he did a song about Woody Guthrie, and it's a song entitled Boy from Oklahoma. This is from Willis Allen Ramsey. A 1972 record by the same name, Willis Allen Ramsey. It's like $7.99, $9.99 at iTunes. You must go buy it. And this is a song entitled Boy from Oklahoma. Because, well, me and Vince and a lot of other guys were boys from Oklahoma.
Traveling across the country, playing on the circuit line. Sometimes I think about a man who's here before my time. Named for the 28th president with the Guthrie tag to the end. Born in Okima shoes with the Dust Bowl blues. A friend of the working man. Now he was impartial to New York buildings and tried to touch the sky. A West Virginia coal mines that took so many lives. Oh, the way they drove the migrant workers back over into Mexico way. And the scalps they run when the hood he'd come and the bosses started to pray. Just a boy from Oklahoma on an endless one-night stand, wandering and rambling, drifting with the midnight sand. He played the blues and the ballads and all that came between. His heart was in the Union and his soul was reaching servant's dream. I was talking to a man that met him in a bar near Clovis town. He said the whole place was a shaking as he was passing his songs around. In between the two friends then, where it'd be when the morrow. Guthrie's dead and buried in the ground. But sometimes I sing his songs and I get to thinking that he's still around. Cause the hole that his fire's everlasting testify that his courses run true. And the rambling man's rears and the kingdom's ears, but his songs are for me and you. Just a boy from Oklahoma on an endless one-night stand, wandering and rambling, drifting with the midnight sand. Played